Anyway, I left the town hall in a thoroughly ill temper, and when they told me that next on the program was a visit to the local academy, I as near as not told them I'd had enough of their damned infants for one day. But I didn't, of course, and presently I was being conducted through the school by the professor, who made an oration in my honour in Greek, and then put up his best boys to construe for my entertainment. The things these honest asses imagine will delight royalty. Of course, the selected pupils were the usual mealy wretches who are put up in all schools everywhere on such occasions. Pious, manly little villains of the type I used to oppress myself in happier days. Tom Brown could have made a football side out of them, I don't doubt, and had them crying, "Play up!" and telling the truth, fit to sicken you. So I decided on a bit of mischief and looked to the back of the school for the local flashman. Aye, there he was, a big surly lout, biting his nails and sneering to himself. "There's a likely lad, Professor," says I. "Let's hear him construe." So willy-nilly they had to put the brute up, and he was paper colour at the shock of it. Of course, he floundered and grunted and glared round for inspiration, and the goody-goodies giggled and nudged each other, and the Professor's frown grew blacker every minute. "Stand down, sir," says he grimly, and to me, "He shall be corrected, Highness, I assure you." "That's your sort, Professor," says I. "Lay on with a will." And I left in excellent humour. There'd be a raw backside in that school by night, or I was mistaken. Mind you, I'd sooner it had happened to the clever little sneaks. But no doubt my counterpart would pass his smarts on to them in turn. The crowds still filled the streets for my final progress to the palace, which was a fine imposing pile on the outskirts of town, with pillars and balconies, and the running lion flag of Strachan's floating from its roof with the Danish colours alongside. The people were jammed up to the railings, and the sweep of the drive beyond was lined with the yellow-jacketed infantry of the Duchess's guard, all in glittering back and breasts with drawn swords. Trumpeters blew a fanfare, the crowd surged and shouted, and I cantered up the gravel to the broad palace steps. There I turned and waved for the last time, and wondered why people make such a fuss over royalty. It's the same with us. We have our tubby little Teddy, whom everyone pretends is the first gentleman of Europe, with all the virtues. When they know quite well he's just a vicious old rake, rather like me, but lacking my talent for being agreeable to order. Anyway, I was a bored Lily Langtree before he was. That, by the way, all such lofty philosophical thoughts were driven from my mind when I entered the palace, for there I met the Duchess I was to marry next day in the old cathedral of Strachan's. And it is a tribute to her that while I have only the haziest memories of the brilliant throng that crowded the marble staircase and great ballroom, my first glimpse of her remains fresh in my mind to this day. I can still see her, standing slim and straight on the dais at the far end of the room, with the ducal throne framed in crimson behind her, watching me as I approached, with the spectators suddenly hushed, and only the sound of my marching feet echoing through the silence.